They have two older boys.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, let's begin. Is Alan, alright, let's pick up where we left off. I think last week we looked at the story of Yehuda and Shimon, if I'm not mistaken. Welcome. And we saw the depth of the history between Yehuda and Shimon, particularly the story of Shimon and his Nachla and the complexity of his Nachla, of having an inheritance, not having an inheritance, and ultimately we connected it to the story of Baal Peor and the beginning of the conquest of the east side of the Jordan. If you were here, then you'll call. If not, it's online, so you're welcome to catch up. And then we looked in Sefer Yehoshua, where we saw that Yehoshua, in the aftermath of Moshe's bracha, where he said to Yehoshua, where he essentially leaves out Shimon altogether, Yehoshua gives him a number of cities inside Shevet Yehuda. And that's essentially where we pick up the story in the beginning of Shoftim, where Yehuda goes to conquer their territory, and Shimon goes with them, obviously, with the intent that there's going to be a partnership between them. All right. What I wanted to do today was try to finish Perek Aleph. And much of it is map-related detail, and I'm not sure how much of that we're going to actually go into, but certainly in broad strokes, it's important to understand what exactly the Perek is trying to convey to us, and I think that the Perek actually has a certain sequential structure to it. And it's that sequential structure that I want to try to take a look at. We're going to start with Pasuk Chaf Bet. Chaf Aleph, I think we talked about, right? Yerushalayim, we talked about? The issue of Yerushalayim and whose territory it belonged to, and whether it was Yehuda that was supposed to take Yerushalayim, or Benjamin that was supposed to take Yerushalayim, ultimately Yerushalayim falling between the cracks. We talked a little bit about that. We're going to start from Pasuk Chaf Bet. So essentially, up till this point, we have a lengthy description for pretty much half the perek, almost more than half the perek, of the story of Yehuda and Shimon. And then we begin the following. Starting with Pasuk Chaf Bet, we're going to do this in units. Vayalu Beit Yosef Gamhem Beit El Vahashem Imam. Beit Yosef also went to Beit El, and God was with them. Vayatiru Beit Yosef Bevet El. What does Vayatiru mean? What does Vayatiru mean? No. Despai. Right. Yes. Latur.
Latur.
Exactly right. Same word that is used in Parashat Shlach for the mission that Moshe sends to the land of Israel. Latur et Eretz Kanaan. Vayatiru et Vayatiru et Beit Yosef et Beit El. They send spies to the city of Beit El. V'shem ha'ir lefanim Luz. Originally the city was Luz. We're going to go back to this. I just want to read through the psukim. Vayiru ha'shomrim ish yotzei min ha'ir. What do they do when they send spies? So they saw somebody, obviously, they saw somebody coming out of the city. V'yamru lo hara'enu na et mevo ha'ir v'asinu imcha chaset. Show us the entrance to the city. So that we will do kindness to you, much as the arrangement they had with Rachav many years earlier. Vayarem et mevohair. Obviously, this guy wasn't particularly too loyal to Luz, and he agreed. He showed them the entrance to the city. ואת האיש ואת כל משפחתו שילך, ויקו את העיר לפי חרב, ואת האיש ואת כל משפחתו שילך. They killed the city, they destroyed the, they conquered the city, and they let this guy and his family go. וילך האיש ארץ החיתים, ויבן עיר, ויקרא שמה לוז, הוא שמה עד היום הזה. And this guy goes up to Eretz HaChitim, which I told you is in Turkey, and he built himself a new city and called it New Luz. New Luz. New Luz. Right? Like New York, like New Amsterdam, like New Jersey. New Luz. Right? Went up to the New World, found himself a city in the New World, and there he remained. Okay, so there's a couple of issues in this little three psukim piece, and it starts with, well, there's two questions. First of all, what does the expression of Hashem Imam mean? They were successful, meaning that they had, in a sense, certain kind of, they had divine providence, God was with them, God helped them, they were... They were going into battle, they would be successful in battle. Not an expression we are not unfamiliar with. We had it actually earlier in the Perek as well, with regards to Yehuda. Just looking for it quickly, and I. We have an expression, Vayal Yehuda Vayiten Hashem et Hakna'ani Ve'Aprizi V'Yado. Yehuda went up and God gave them in, the Kanani into their hands. You actually have a more explicit expression. Pasuk Yud Tet. Pasuk Yud Tet. I think we're going to have to just move these tables an inch back so we get a corridor in the back so that people can come in.
Is this separation of men and women?
No. It happened to be the way people sat down. Vayet, if you take a look on Pasuk Yud Tet, Vayahi Hashem, Pasuk Yud Tet, Vayahi Hashem et Yehuda, Vayoresh et Tahar. Almost the exact same expression. God was with Yehuda as he began to take territory in the mountain range. You have a similar expression here, Vashem Imam, God was with them. With regards to Yosef, however, this expression has a different ring to it. Why? Yes, no? Familiar, not familiar? Doesn't ring a bell? Excuse me? Monday morning? It's too early in the morning for memory jogging? Is that... Is that it? No, the expression Vashem Imam, specific to Yosef. Why would that be significant? So take a quick glance at Breishit, Perek Lamed Tet. Yosef Hurad Mitzrayma Lametet. Right from the beginning. Yosef Hurad Mitzrayma. Yosef went down to Mitzrayim. This is right after the sale. Vayikneu Potifar Swiss Parosara Tabachim Ish Mitzrayim Yada Ish Melim Asher Horiduhu Shama. He was purchased by Potifar, Paro's servant. Vayihi Hashem et Yosef. God was with Yosef, and therefore he was successful. Vayish matzliach. Similarly, turn to the end of the parak, parak chav aleph, and when he gets thrown into jail after the episode with Eshet Potifar, pasuk chav aleph. Vayehi Hashem et Yosef, vayet elav chased. God was with Yosef, and he had favor. And Vayitin Chino Be'inei Sahat Beit HaSohar, found favor in the eyes of the general. So twice, and actually there's a few additional expressions, but at least twice in the story of Yosef, we find this expression as a notion of divine providence. God was with him, God helped him, Yehi Hashem et Yosef. When we read about Vayalu bet Yosef gamhem v'Hashem imam, Yosef goes up and God was with them. It has a certain ring to it that I think is perhaps unique. You have the expression by Yehuda too, but by Yosef it has a certain historical context that I think has some significance to it. The bigger question, and I'll come back to the expression by Hashem Imam in a moment, but the bigger question that I think we need to ask is where is Beit El and which Beit El are we talking about? How many Beit El's do we have? So, first of all, where is Beit El? Our trusty map I trust you all have a copy of, right? We have more. Where is Beit El? So Beit El, if you look on the map, sits right between Ephraim and Binyamin. Beit El is the northernmost border of Binyamin, the southernmost border of Ephraim. So it sits. So I'm assuming it's the same Beit El. I would assume it's the same Beit El that we talk about in the story of Yaakov, and the same Beit El, or at least it would seem, that it would be the same Beit El that we refer to first. Where's the first time we find the city of Beit El? Sefer Bereshit, we have to refresh our memories a little bit of Sefer Bereshit. Yaakov. Okay, Yaakov. Yaakov is the second time we come to Beit El. The first time we come to Beit El? Abraham. Okay, good. Abraham. Parshat? 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 Lech Lecha. Lech Lecha. Parshat Lech Lecha. Abraham Avinu comes to Israel. Perek Yud Bet. Vayavor Avram Ba'aretz. Avram comes down from Haran after God tells him to come to the land. Vayavor Avram Ba'aretz Ad Makom Shechem. Ad Elon Moreh. He's coming down from the north. Remember that Abraham's journey starts in Ur Kasdim, takes him up to Haran, which is up here in the north, and then from Haran, God comes to him and he says, Lech Lecha, go down to the land of Israel. So he starts his journey southward, and he comes to the land of Canaan. He comes to the first place he comes to is the city of Shechem. Elon Moreh, Makom Shechem. V'Aknani az Ba'aretz. And there he finds the Canaanites. Vayera Hashem el Avram vayomer lezeracha aten et ha'aretz hazot. God comes to him and says to him, God, I will give you this land. Vayivin shem mizbeach l'Hashem hanira elav. He builds a mizbeach there in Shechem. Vayatek misham hahara. There he heads towards the mountains. Okay, straight down towards the mountains. The mountains are beneath him. The mountains are south of him. Mikedem lebeit el. East of Beit El, Vayet Ohalo Beit El, Vayet Ohalo, he pitches his tent, Beit El Miyam, Vaha'ai Mikedem. Familiar. Beit El Miyam, Vaha'ai Mikedem, between Beit El and Ai. So Abraham comes to Shechem, from Shechem he heads southward, and he's going to eventually head to Hebron, and then down into Mitzrayim, and then I'll come back to Hebron. He's going straight down along the top of the mountain range of Yudan Shomron, right, what we call the road that is called Derech HaAvot. If you ever walked or hiked that road?
I did a tour in Israel a year
Right, right along the top of the mountain. Right. It's called Kav Parshat HaMayim. It's actually, there's a... how do you translate Kav Parshat HaMayim in English? I don't even know what it is in English. You have a mountain range, there's a point at which the water on either side... But this is on the mountain, so the mountain, if it rains, the water on one side will flow down one side of the mountain, and the other will flow down the other. It's called Kav Parashat HaMayim. I forgot what it's called in English. No, it's unique to every mountain, or to every mountain range. You'll have
It's a divide.
Anyway, that's the top of the mountain. That's the road he's taking. Shechem, Beit El Ai, and then you'll head down further south. So the first time we come to Beit El is in the very first moments that Abraham steps foot into Eretz Yisrael. That's right, and I as well, and of course I is very familiar to us, primarily from Sefer Yehoshua. The second time we come to Beit El is Yaakov. So let's take a quick glance there. Perikav Chet. Parashat Vayetze. Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'eshava Vayelech Haran. Yaakov is running away from Esav. He's headed to Haran. Vayivga b'makom v'yalan sham. He comes to a place and there he sleeps. Kiva Hashemesh, the sunset, takes up the stones, he makes a pillow, has a dream. The dream is not my issue, of course we know the dream. The dream is the ladder going up and going down. God says to him, I will give you this land. You will spread east, west, north, south. I will be with you. Pasuk Tet Zayin. Vayikatz Yaakov mishnato v'yomer. Achen yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh v'anochi lo yadati. There is God in this place. This place is godly. Vayira Yaakov v'yomer. Ma nara makom hazeh. He was frightened. He said, this is an awesome place. This is a place of great holiness and fear and reverence. Ein ze ki im bet Elokim veze sha'ar hashamayim. This is none other than the house of God and the gates of heaven. Vayashkem Yaakov baboker vayikach et even asher sam et mirashotav vayasam otam hatziva. He takes the stones, he turns it into a monument, pours oil over it, vayitzok shemen avosha. Vayikra et shem hamakom ahu Beit El. And he names the place Beit El. V'ulam luz shem ha'ir l'rishona. And of course, the ancient name of the city was Luz, which he renames to Beit El because Beit El is... Right? But why is he naming Beit El? Because? Because he says, Ein ze ki im Beit Elokim, v'zeh Shar HaShemayim. This is the Beit Elokim, and therefore he calls it Shar HaShemayim. So of course it raises the obvious question, which is, assuming it's the same Beit El, so Abraham comes to Beit El, Yaakov comes to Luz, and he names it Beit El. So first of all, we have to understand how names in Tanakh work. Often we have names of places that are named and given their name because of a course of events, referred to earlier by that same name. That doesn't mean that the irony of ironies, the city had this name, and now we rename it to the same name because of an event that occurred. It simply means that Tanakh is written in hindsight. So Abraham comes to the city of Beit El, named so because of an event that hasn't yet happened. So in Abraham's time, what was it called? Luz. We know it as the city of Beit El because we are familiar with it as Beit El. So the narrative, which is the name of the city at that point, is irrelevant. It's just telling us where he was. So we use the name that we are familiar with. Three stories later, Yaakov comes to the city, he names it Beit El, and of course, it's the ancient city of Luz. And so, virtually all the Mefarshim, assume that we're talking about, of course, the same Beit El. And that it was simply, and we have this often, Gilgal is a classic example. They come to the city of, they cross over the Jordan River, they come to Gilgal, they set up base camp in Gilgal. Then God comes to Yeshua and he says, now circumcise everybody in the camp of Israel. They circumcise the entire people of Israel. They make a great, you pardon me for reviewing the story, but they make a great pile of all of the aralot that they had from the circumcisions of the entire nation of Israel. They called it a Gal, and therefore they named the city Gilgal. So they come to Gilgal, they set up camp in Gilgal, then they have Bris Mila, then they call it Gilgal. Obviously it didn't happen that way. Whatever its ancient name or older name was, we know it as Gilgal. So they come, they tell us they camped in Gilgal, and as the story unfolds, we find out why it is called Gilgal. Similarly, we just had it in Perek Bet, the Malach that comes to them in Bochim. Remember that story? In Perek Bet of Shoftim. The Malach comes to them in Bochim, tells them how terrible they've been, they all start crying. So they name the place Bochim. Mm-hmm. So the Malach comes to them in Bochim and they name the place Bochim. The Malach came to them wherever it was, it's irrelevant. There was an event there, the event was characterized by their crying, they named the place Bochim. In hindsight, as the story is written, when the Malach comes to them, he comes to them in a city called Bochim. Stylistically, that's how Tanakh is written. Yeah?
I just have a question about the word, the reference to Luz. Was that city significant in some way because it's referred to in Bereshit and then again in Shoftim, without our having any reference to it except as Beitel? Why would it go out of its way
Luz is not the only city that gets renamed, and therefore the original name is identified. If Luz was the only example, it might be significant. But there are other significance. If they take a city and rename it, I don't think so. If they take a city and rename it, then at one point you acknowledge what the name originally was. In the case of Yaakov, so for Yaakov he called it Beit El. I don't think anybody else called it Beit El per se. Yaakov didn't have anybody there. In Shoftim, when they come to Beit El, it doesn't say that they named the city Beit El. It says they came to Beit El. V'ulam luz shema irish levishana. I need to know where it was. This was the ancient city of Luz. Remember, Yaakov renamed it Luz. Okay, so this is the renamed to Beit El. This is the city of Luz that Yaakov renamed to Beit El. Know that this is the same place. That's essentially the concept
the
behind
one
it.
That they moved to Turkey or something?
Yeah, he moves all the way up to Eretz Chittim and builds himself a new city, calls it Luz. Al Shem Ha'ir Harishana, the name of the old city of Luz, of course, gives way to the joke about Numbers. And on the face of it, that's where we're at. They come to Beit El, Yosef comes to Beit El, he conquers Beit El, and pretty much I have the Beit El by Abraham, I have Beit El by Yaakov, and I have Beit El in Shoft. And on that level, that's where the story ends. Except we have one problem. We actually have a few problems. The first problem is, and it's a problem that the Mefarshim struggle with, what does Yaakov do with this city of Beit El? What is he saying about, in the context of the story of Yaakov, what did Yaakov say about the city of Beit El / Luz? It's holy, it's a gate to heaven, it's Beit Elokim, it's all of these things. The only problem with it is, and Rashi on the spot identifies this challenge, at no point in the history of Bnei Yisrael do we ever find any kind of Beit Mikdash that they built in Beit El. Actually, that's not exactly accurate. We never find the Beit Mikdash in Beit El. We do find a Mikdash in Beit El. Who put a Mikdash in Beit El? Not exactly a Mikdash, I would call it, but something of a similar nature.
Kingdom of Israel.
Correct. When Yeravam splits the kingdom from Rechavam ben Shlomo, when the kingdom of Israel splits, Judah and Israel, one of the things Yeravam ben Nevat does is he sets up two idolatrous temples with eagles. And he puts one in the south, in the southern border, between the border of Yehuda and Yisrael, and the other in the north. The one in the north is in Shevet Dan. The one in the south is in the city of Beit El. And one of the rationales for why he does that is because he's trying to go back to Yaakov's tradition. As if to say to his people, I'm putting the real temple in the real city of God, not Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is an invention of David HaMelech. Beit El has a tradition of being Beit Elokim all the way back to the days of Yaakov. I've got the real Beit El. I've got the real Mikdash. And that was his message. So there is a tradition of a temple in Beit El, albeit a problematic one. Correct? Albeit a problematic one. So the first question is, where do we ever find a mikdash, at least from the perspective of Yaakov, a proper mikdash, put into the city of Beit El? We don't. So what happened to Yaakov's tefillah? What happened to Yaakov's declaration, this is the city of Beit El, and this is Shaar HaShamayim? So Rashi goes, in a sense, from a perspective of hindsight, Rashi takes us back to Yerushalayim. And he says, the famous Rashi, where he says that it's not possible that Yaakov could have passed through Yerushalayim and not davened there. Yerushalayim is the place of the Avos. Yerushalayim is the place of the Beis HaMikdash. He's talking about the Beis HaMikdash. He must be in Yerushalayim. So he retranslates the phrase, Vayifga b'makom, he came to the place, as a reference to Yerushalayim. And so Rashi jumps to the Medrash that says that Yaakov slept on the ground and God took all of Eretz Yisrael and folded it up underneath him. You remember the Medrash, so that he's in Beit El, and his feet is in Beit Sheva, and he's in Yerushalayim, and therefore he sees the entire sequence of Eretz Yisrael. But on the Pshat level, it's a problem. How is he in Beit El and talking about Beit Elokim? That's one question. The other question is, there's a reference, and this is a reference that the Vilna Gaon points out. There's a reference to Luz in Sefer Yehoshua. And the reference in Luz to Sefer Yehoshua is somewhat problematic for us. It says in Sefer Yehoshua, Perek Tet Zayin, Sefer Yehoshua, right at the beginning, describing the boundary and the borders of Shevet Yosef, Vayitze HaGoral Livnei Yosef Miyarden Yerecho, the boundary, the border of Shevet Yosef, meaning Ephraim and Manasseh, starts at Yericho, Lemei Yericho Yimizrach, it starts at the Jordan River and it heads east, sorry, heads west, Ole Miricho Bahar Beit El, goes up from Yericho to the mountain of Beit El. Vayetzemi Beit El. Beit El itself belongs to Shevet Binyamin and it belongs to Shevet Ephraim. It's sort of one of those border cities. Vayetzemi Beit El Luza. Ve'avar agvul ha'arki atarot. And from Beit El it heads north to Luz. I missed something? I thought Beit El was Luz. So says the Vilna Gaon, what does it mean? Right? Send me Beit El Luza. How did we get from Beit El to Luz when Beit El? So you could say that. You know, if you ever see modern cities that are built around ancient tells, the tell is always just outside the city. They always build the city separate from the tell. So it could be that here was ancient Luz, and they built Beit El next to it. And it's a tiny little shvil that goes from Beit El to Luz. That's possible. But if we're talking about border boundaries, or cities that are identified as part of the Shevet, to talk about going from Beit El to Luz, maybe there's something there that's somewhat problematic. And so we're left with a bit of a quandary. How do I get to Beit El here, near Ai, where Abraham is, and talk about a Beit Elokim, and at the same time talk about a road that goes in Shevet Ephraim from Beit El to Luz? Those are my two primary issues. So here's a possibility. I'm going to take you to two more places. Here's a possibility. Yeah, basically. This is called learning Tanakh. You think you're learning Shoftim, you're really learning Tanakh. This is armchair sightseeing. I like that expression. One day, please God, we'll take a real sightseeing. Wouldn't that be nice? Take a look in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud. You learned Shmuel Aleph, right? Perek Yud. Conversation that Shmuel Hanavi has with Shaul, designated to be Shaul HaMelech. That moment when Shaul comes to him, he's not yet Shaul HaMelech, he's designated to be, he's told he's going to be. Shmuel says to him a number of things to tell him, in fact, that he is headed towards greatness, that he is going to be this great king, and he gives him a number of signs. Remember the signs? Like miraculous events that are going to occur to Shaul in the next little while on his journey home, three different signs that will prove to him that Shmuel is a legitimate Navi and that this is a real prophecy that he's going to become king. And one of them is Pasuk Gimel. Let's start with Pasuk Bet. Belechtecha hayom me'imadi, as you leave me, umetzata shnei anashim im kurat rechel begvul binyamin. You will head back to your home, you'll find two people near Kever Rachel in the boundary of Binyamin. One day we'll talk about where Kever Rachel is and where Kever Rachel is not. But for now, it's clear at this point in this pasuk that Kever Rachel is in Shevet Binyamin. Shevet Binyamin is north of Yerushalayim, for the record, not south of Yerushalayim. Shevet Binyamin, and therefore Kever Rachel in Shevet Binyamin needs to be north of Yerushalayim, subject of discussion. In Tzatzach, v'amu elecha nimtzu ha'atanot asher alachta levakesh, and those two people who you'll see, they'll tell you that the donkeys that you were looking for were found. He's stopped worrying about his donkeys, now he's worrying about his son. V'chalavta misham, from there you will go on. V'hala, you will continue your journey. Uvata ad elon tavor, and you'll come to the area of Elon Tavor. So he's headed north. I'm not sure if it's the same Tavor as Har Tavor, but he's in this area. Umitzauch Hashem shlosha anashim, and there you will find three people, olim el ha'elokim Beit El, going up to God in Beit El. Echad nasei shlosha gdayim, echad nasei shloshet kikvot lechem, echad nasei neva yayin. One is bringing the animals for sacrifices, the other is bringing the bread, and the other is bringing the wine. And they're going to bring offerings, korbanot, to God in Beit El. Of course, that raises a problem, which is, no mikdash in Beit El. There is no mikdash in Beit El. There never was a mikdash in Beit El. Certainly not in the days of Shmuel. This is Shmuel and Avi talking about. Where are they going to Beit El for? Okay, let's go back to Sefer Shoftim. We're just going to go run through the whole story. Sefer Shoftim. Jump to the end. Perek Chaf. Told you, Sefer Shoftim ends with two stories that are really quite horrific in character. One is called Tesamicha, and the other is called Pilegesh Begiva. We're not going to go through Pilegesh Begiva again, except to remember that this is a great civil war, and as part of that civil war, all the Shvatim gathering together to go to war against Shevet Binyamin. For now, that's all we need to know. In the meantime, take a look in Pasuk Yud Zayin, Perek Chaf, Pasuk Yud Zayin. Ve'ish Yisrael hitpakdu levad mi'binyamin 400,000 ish. All of Israel gathered together, besides Binyamin, of course, because Binyamin is not part of it. Right? This is Israel against Binyamin. 400,000 soldiers. If ish shalef charef, swordsman, calls her ish mechama, ready for war. Vayakumu, vayalu Beit El, vayishalu be'elokim, vayamru b'nei Yisrael, mi ya'alelanu batchila l'melchama im b'nei Binyamin, vayomer Hashem Yehuda batchila. They go to Beit El to ask God through the Urim v'Tumim who should go first, and God says, Yehuda always goes first. We also saw Yehuda goes first. Yehuda goes first. L'tov l'ra, Yehuda goes first. What's the problem? What's the problem? How did he get to the Kohen Gadol and the Urim V'Tumim in Beit El? Right? How do you get to the Urim V'Tumim and the Kohen Gadol in Beit El? If you look a little bit further, the end of the story, Pasuk, end of the Perek, not quite the end, Pasuk, Chaf, Chet, or Chafav, let's go. After the first battle they lose. So after they lose the first battle, Vayalu kol b'nei Yisrael v'chol ha'am v'yavo Beit El, all the B'nai Yisrael gathered together in Beit El, vayivku vayishvu sham lifnei Hashem, they cried there before God, vayatsumu bayamahu ad ha'arev, and they cried there until the evening, vayalu olot ushlamim lifnei Hashem, they bring offerings and sacrifices before God, vayishalu B'nai Yisrael b'Hashem v'sham aron brit elokim bayamim ahem, and there is the aron before God in those days. וישאלו בני ישראל בהשם ושם ארון ברית אלוקים ופנחס בן אלעזר בן אהרון עומד לפניו בימים ההם לאמור הוסיף לצאת למחמם בני בנימין אחי ויומר עם אחדיו ויומר השם עלו כי מחר אתננו בידך. There is the Aaron, there is Pinchas ben Elazar, the Kohen Gadol, there is the Urim V'Tumim, there in Beit El. What are we doing in Beit El? How and when did we ever get to Beit El from Beit Midrash? Pass that down if you don't mind. Yeah, but to talk about the Aron there is remarkably problematic. Oh, so take a look. Radak says something remarkable. Look at the Radak on the bottom of the page. Radak says, very bottom, this is the Radak on Pilegesh Begibah. So what I'm going to suggest to you is I'm going to extrapolate from this Radak to the rest of the whole story. But Radak is focused primarily on this story of Pilegesh Begibah. And he says, Vayavo Beit El, Hanira Be'enai, Ki Al Shilo Amar. Says the Radak, in Pilegesh Begibah, when it talks about Beit El, it can't mean Beit El. It can only mean Shilo. Because there's no, it's not possible for them to be anywhere else. Ki sham haya haron. That's where the Beit HaMikdash, where the Shemishkan was. Why is it called Beit El? Nikra Beit El. If you Nikra Beit El, it's called Beit El, because there's the Aron. Uvet Hashem. It's called the house of God.
It wasn't a place. It was a home.
I once told you that there are multiple cities by the name of Beit Lechem in Israel. Why? Because anytime you had farmland, you called it Beit Lechem. How many cities in Israel are called Mitzpeh? Lots. Because every hilltop is called Mitzpeh or Tzfat. Right. Names of cities were named on the basis of what function they served. If there's more than one Beit Lechem, and there's more than one Mitzpeh, and there's more than one Tzfat, it stands to reason when there can be more than one Beit El. If you take a city and you put a temple there, you're going to call the city Beit El. Why does Yaakov name the city Beit El? Because Ein Zeh Ki Im Beit Elokim Vezeh Shaar HaShamayim. Question is, what city is he in? Right? So which city is Luz? We are working under the assumption that Beit El of Yaakov / Luz is the same as Beit El of Abraham. Beit El of Abraham, we know where it is. It's near Ai. But it never identifies where the Beit El of Yaakov is. And if Beit El of Yaakov is the place where there will be a Beit Elokim, then the next, and we know it's not Yerushalayim, the next logical candidate for it to be would be Shiloh. Then we could talk about a road that goes from Beit El to Shiloh. Then we can talk about B'nai Yosef, Ephraim, coming to conquer the city of Beit El / Luz, and Vashem Imam, and God being with them, having the significance beyond just the notion of the divine presence and the Shekhinah. If God is with them, it means you carry God with you. And you carry God with you, then you carry the Aron. Because if they're going to Shiloh, it means that they're going to place the Aron and the Mishkan in Shiloh, Vashem Imam. So there's a whole new meaning to the story.
From place to place and the name.
They're not carrying it from place to place. They're going to one city, for there they're going to put the Mishkan. Where's the one city to where they're going to put the Mishkan? Shiloh. They're not taking the armor from place to place. The armor didn't go into war, with the exception of the story of the Plishtim in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, and it ended in disaster. But they're going to move the Mishkan, beginning of Perek Yitzchat of Yeshua, they move the Mishkan to Shiloh. Where do they go to Shiloh? When do they get to Shiloh? How do they conquer Shiloh? Never tells us. So maybe, and again, it's pure conjecture, because the Mefarshim don't read it this way, but it's possible that what we're dealing with is not the conquest of the city of Beit El, the border with Binyamin, which is Abraham's Beit El, but rather the conquest of the city of Shiloh, Yaakov's Beit El, Luz, LaRishonah. And it's the city of Shiloh that Yaakov calls Beit Elokim Shar Shemayim. It's the city of Shiloh which Yaakov refers to in his bracha to his children when he says to Shevet Yehuda, Lo Yasur Shevet Mi Yehuda Mechokek Mi Ben Raglav Ad Ki Yavo Shiloh Velo Yikatamim. If Yaakov saw the destiny of Shiloh, he created the place of the importance of Shiloh. Shevet Yosef, Shevet Ephraim, goes to conquer the city of Shiloh, / Luz, / Beit El, call it Beit El, and put there the Shechina of Hashem Ima. Again, it's a conjecture, because in the first you read one Beit El, not two. But it's quite possible that this is also a legitimate approach to this whole story, and then suddenly this whole opens up this whole new meaning to this little episode about the conquest of the city of Luz and its significance. Shiloh, which for us, Shiloh is a much less significant place, because who knows, for us it's all about Yerushalayim. But in the context of Tanakh, remember that the Mishkan stands in Shiloh for 370 years. It's a long period of history. The Beit HaMikdash only lasted 410. Which means that that Shiloh was no less significant for half the period of Tanakh than the Beit HaMikdash was in Yerushalayim. The only difference was that we didn't have a Malchus, so we didn't have the centrality of the capital of Israel. We just had a place where the Mishkan was. But in terms of the Mishkan itself, Shiloh was enormously significant. All right, that's the story of Beit El. Quickly, I want to run through the rest of the parak, and then we will. So let's go back to Shoftim Perak Aleph. That's Ephraim. Pasuk Chav Zayin. V'lo harish Menashe et Beit She'an v'et Bnota. ואת תנח ואת בנותיו ואת יושב דור ואת בנותיו ואת יושבי יבלעם ואת בנותיו ואת יושבי מגידו ואת בנותיו ויואל הכנני לשבת בארץ הזאת. Menashe was unable to settle or to inherit, more to settle. Actually, it's actually the term Horish really means to remove the local population and dwell in their stead. That's what the term the Horish means, to disinherit. The areas of Beit Shan, Tanach, Megiddo. If you look on the map, Tanach and Megiddo are both here in the valley, right on a straight line down south from Har Carmel. They actually are literally along a river bed called, anybody know? It's called Nachal Kishon. Why is that familiar to you? But it is familiar, right?
Yes.
Nachal Kishon. Right. If you were listening in Shul to the Haftarah of the Shabbos, you would have heard Nachal Kishon. Right. Story of Yiftach. Story of Devorah and Barak. We're going to get to in a moment. And Yoshev Megiddo. Tanach and Megiddo. Vayol Aknani Leshevet Ba'aretz Hazot. This area here, the Canaanites managed to control. Vayi Ki Chazak Yisrael. Vayasem Et Aknani Lemas. V'horish lo horisho. There would be a time when Israel would get stronger and they would be able to conquer this land, but never quite to remove the Canaanites completely, but only to maintain some kind of control that would require the Canaanites to pay tribute to them, or to pay taxes to them. What are we referring to when it says, Vahiki Chazak Yisrael? What period of history, what period of time, when was it so that Vahiki Chazak Yisrael? That would be the past. That would be earlier than this. We're talking about the future. When in the future they get stronger, then the Canaanites will pay them taxes and tributes. Maybe, but I'm not sure you need to go that far. In the context of Sefer Shoftim, we know when they are able to turn the tide and control over this region, specifically the story of Devar and Barak. These are names of cities, all of these. Tanakh, Megiddo, not so much Beit Sham, but this whole region of Emek Israel is the centerpiece of the story of Dvar and Barak. Take a quick glance at Perek Dalet and Hei. Dalet, Pasuk, Chav, Gimel. Vayachna Elokim b'yom ahu et Yavin Melech Kanaan lifnei b'nei Israel, after Israel was victorious over the army of Sisera. Their hand became stronger. Vatelech yad b'nei Yisrael haloch v'kasha al yavin melaknan. The hand of Israel gained strength over that of Yavin, king of Knan, and his general by the name of Sisera. Similarly, if you look in Perek Hey, which is the Shira, Pasuk Yotet, Ba'u melachim nilchamu, az nilchamu malchei Knan, B'ta'anach al-mei Megiddo. The battle that took place on the cities, over the cities of Tanakh and the waters of Megiddo. This whole region was the centerpiece of the story of the Battle of Dvar and Barak, Emek Israel. We'll talk about a critical region in the land of Israel, and it was at that point that we were able to turn the tide. So what the introduction says to us is that for now they're unable to take it. There will come a time when they will even be able to conquer it. But even after they conquered it, Devorah, Barak, even after they conquered it, they could get taxes from the local residents, they could ensure their loyalty, perhaps by law, but what they could not do was drive them out. Vaharish loharisha. So they could even reach the heights that Devorah and Barak were able to reach, but that's still one step short of what they needed to do. Aside, why is this piece of land so critical? Why is Emek Yisrael so, right, that's what it is, from Emek Beit Shan all the way up to Carmel. Why is this swath of land, this yellow bridge in the midst of all the orange, why is it so critical that the first major battle that we will have, actually not the first, but certainly the longest, first major story, which is Devar and Barak, is going to take place there? So I've told you this before, but it's easy for me to show it to you. Actually, if you turn the page over, there's a map. You see the map? This is a very interesting map. I like this map. It's a little fuzzy, my apologies. It's not you. You don't only need to check your glasses. It's a little fuzzy because Thank you, Shelley. Mitch will appreciate that. No, it's a very small map on my computer, and I blew it up so that you could see it, but of course it makes it a little fuzzy. But the reason why I like it is because you see very clearly, what is this a map of?
Caravan roads.
Roads. It's a road map. These are the road maps. If you went to buy the Karta road map in the time of Avram Avinu, this is what you would buy. Right? This is what you would get into your car and drive, or your camel and drive with. Right? This is your roadmap. And what you immediately see is that there are essentially three major highways, north-south. The one that runs through the Jordan, the east side of the Jordan Valley, this side, north-south, all the way, from Damascus in the north, Damascus, all the way south, is called Derech HaMelech, referred to in Dvarim and in Bamidbar, when Moshe says to Sichon and to Og, Derech HaMelech Melech, also known as, in English, the King's Highway. Right.
We were on it.
Yeah.
We went to Petra.
Yeah, absolutely. Derech HaMelech, King's Highway. On the far left, Sidon, Tsor, along the coast, from the north, Sidon, Tsor, Akko, Megiddo, Yafo, Yavna, Ashdod, Ashkelon, Aza, the coastal road called Derech Hayam, or in Parsha Beshalach referred to as Derech Eretz Plishtim. And that's Derech Eretz Plishtim. That's the road that goes along the coast. It goes all the way along the coast here, all the way up to Egypt. That's the road that God didn't want to take them because it was too close to war, etc. That's Derech Eretz Plishtim. Doesn't mean through the land of the Plishtim. It means a road that runs that along the coast called Derech Hayam. A much less traveled road, certainly not for trade routes, but traversable, certainly by foot, is along the mountain, center of the from Beit Shan, Tirzah, Shechem, Levona, Beit El, Yerushalayim, Beit Lechem, Hebron, Be'er Sheva. Derech Avot. You see that road?
Mm-hmm.
Now here's the problem. Three parallel roads. Now the story of the two businessmen who were negotiating a trade. One was from somewhere in Asia, say Japan, and one was American, and they were negotiating. They finally got to the end of the negotiation, and the American says to the Japanese, he says, you know, I finally think we're working on parallel lines here. And the next day, the guy doesn't show up to the meeting. So the American calls the hotel, and he sees that he checked out and is on his way to the airport. So he runs to the airport and he says, what do you mean? We were about to sign the contract. And he says, parallel line. I looked up in dictionary. Parallel lines, two lines never meet. Right? So he left. That's actually a true story. But these are three parallel routes. Derech HaMelech, Derech
Hayam,
or Derech Eretz Prishtim, Derech HaAvot. They never meet. So if you're a trader, and you need to move your goods from Damascus in the north to Mitzrayim in the east, which are the two major trade centers. You can go this way and you'll end up in Saudi Arabia. You can go this way and you'll end up in Egypt. But if you're here and you want to get here, where are you going
to
go? The only road that cuts across these roads is through Emek Beit Shan and Emek Yisrael. Goes right through the valley. He who controls this road controls the entire region. Location, location, location. Exactly right. He who controls this highway can tax the trade route. All you need to do is put a small tax on every caravan coming through, and you're sitting pretty. So Emek Yisrael becomes enormously important economically, geographically, militarily. Emek Yisrael if you hold on to Emek Yisrael, you control the whole region. First of all, and certainly the roads. The voice, you know, the Ben Gurion once said that the wars in Israel will always be fought over the roads, control of the highways. Water too, but you need the roads to get to the water.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you. So they conquered the lands, but they couldn't chase them up. They couldn't
right.
chase them up. That was because Hashem said that they sinned. And
we didn't get to the why.
Okay.
The why is in Perek Bet. We haven't gotten to the why. The big question
what did they do to sin?
Right. We haven't gotten to the why. We'll get to the why in Perek Bet at length, and it's the old question of. They didn't. They didn't conquer. They wouldn't conquer. They couldn't conquer. Didn't. Wouldn't. Couldn't. We'll get to that in Perek Bet. I'm not ready for that discussion quite yet. But that's certainly one significant reason for the control of Emek Yisrael. The other being, The other significant role that Emek Yisrael plays. Maybe, I'm not sure it's more fertile than the mountain range or elsewhere, but look at the tribes of Israel. Look at forget the orange and the yellow for a moment, look at the location of the tribes of Israel. Reuven, Gad, Menashe, Dan, Asher, and Naphtali, Yisachar, Zvulun, Menashe, Ephraim, Yehuda, and Shimon. What does Emek Yisrael do? Emek Yisrael divides all the three tribes in the north and the three tribes in the east from the six tribes to the south. So Emek Yisrael really cuts through not only the two major roadways of Israel, but it cuts through the center of the tribal division of the land of Israel. We're used to thinking of Emek Yisrael in the north, because that's only because for us today in modern Israel, Israel is cut short. And we don't have access to the tribal region of Asher and Naphtali and Dan, which is north into Lebanon. But if you were to look at the whole region of Israel as promised and divided to the Shvatim, Emek Yisrael divides the six tribes to the north and east from the six tribes from the south. So it's enormously important just to hold the Shvatim together. So it serves a double purpose, both geopolitically and economically, and internally for Israel. This is one of the most critical regions in the country. Well, Devar and Barak do, but they can't hold the Canaanites, they can't remove the Canaanites, so there's a constant turnover in the region. Next. Pasuk Chav Tet. Ephraim lo harishet haknani yoshev b'gazer v'yeshev haknani b'kirbo b'gazer. Ephraim is unable to take the region of Gezer. They can get through the mountains, they can't get to the coast, for reasons we explained, and the Canaanites will dwell in their midst in Gezer. Lamed. Zvulun lo harishet yoshve kitron v'et yoshve nehalol v'yeshev haknani b'kirbo v'yihi lamas. Zvulun. North. Can't take the areas of Nahalol. I'm not sure where these areas are, but Zvulun is primarily yellow, so obviously their region is much smaller. And Vayu Lamas, they paid tribute. Who paid tribute to whom? Let's take it on the face value that the Canaanites paid tribute to the Israelites. Asher lo harish et yeshve Akko v'et yeshve Tzidon v'et Achlav v'et Achziv v'et Chelba v'et Afik v'et Rechov. Whole list of cities. V'yeshev ha'asheri bekerev ha'knani yoshve ha'aretz. The Asherites dwelled amongst the Canaanites, the inhabitants, the dwellers of the land. We have a new expression in this verse. What's the new expression? That's the Asheri. What's the new expression? Right. First of all, it's Asher b'kerav haKnani. The role is reversed. It's not the Canaanites amongst the Israelites. It's the Israelites amongst the Canaanites, and the Canaanites are called Yoshve Haaretz. The Canaanites, for the first time, are called Yoshve Haaretz. Next, Zvulun. Naphtali. Naphtali lo harish et yoshve Bet Shemesh. Bet Yoshve, it's a different Bet Shemesh, obviously, because we're up north. Bet Yoshve Bet Anat, Bet Yeshev Bekerev Aknani Yoshve Haaretz. Same expression as we had by Asher. Bet Yoshve Bet Shemesh Bet Anat Hayu Lehem Lamas. So, again, interesting question. They're unable to take Beit Shemesh and Anat. The people of Beit Shemesh and Anat, Vayulem Lamas, who's paying tax to whom?
It's being paid to.
Sounds like it's being paid to Israel.
Right?
On the other hand, it says, Vayeshev Bikerev HaKna'ani. So there's a larger Canaanite mass around them, And ultimately, that's why in the map, it's just like this little orange enclave amidst a Canaanite region. Vayol ha'emori, pasuk lamed hei, vayol ha'emori l'shevet b'yad pasuk lamed dalet, I skipped one. Vayol chatzu ha'emori et b'nei Dan ha'hara, ki lo natano levedet la'emek. Dan is completely pushed out of the region, they couldn't get to the emek at all, and they are pushed all the way up into the north. Vayol ha'emori l'shevet b'har cheres, b'ayalon b'shalavim, v'tichbad yad b'et Yosef ha'yu amas. Hand of Yosef was strong, and they paid tribute to Gvula Emori Mimalea Krabim Me'asel Avama. Alright. The notion of Dan going up to the Bashan, by the way, has biblical precedent. Yaakov places Dan here. How do I know that Yaakov placed Dan here along the coast? Do you remember the bracha to Dan? Remember the bracha to Dan? What was the bracha to Dan? Yehi Dan? No, it doesn't say it explicitly. It's an interesting phrase. It says, Yehi Dan nachash alei derech shvifon alei orach. Dan would be a serpent or a snake along the path. Noshech ikve sus vayipol rochvo achor, who will bite the heel of the horse and cause the rider to fall backwards. It's the only reference to the rider and the horse in the brachos to his children. Why is it necessary to describe the rider and horse and to describe Dan as a serpent who will bite the heel of the horse? Because essentially he's saying to Dan, you are going to live along the coast, where your challenge is not going to be the Canaanite, the Amorites. Your challenge is going to be the Canaanite chariots. So I'll give you an etzah, how to deal with the chariots. The answer is, how do you conquer a horse? Or how do you conquer the rider? By frightening the horse. So you're going to have to learn how to be the serpent along the way that can get to the heel of the horse. You're going to have to learn to fight a different kind of battle. Rashi says it's a reference to Shimshon, because that was exactly the methodology of Shimshon. Shimshon is from Shevet Dan, who goes into Eretz Plishtim, goes into the Plishti culture and society and bites them from behind. That's the whole methodology, imagery of Shimshon. Moshe, on the other hand, says to Dan in his bracha, "Uledan amar Dan gur Aryeh yizanek min haBashan." Dan will draw his sustenance from the Bashan. What's the Bashan? Og Melech haBashan. The Bashan is the Golan Heights. So Yaakov put Dan on the coast, and Moshe put Dan in the north. It's one of the few places where there's actually a discrepancy between where they got put. And historically, the result was that Dan starts here, and when they can't make it, they end up migrating. So, to summarize this whole chapter, I've given you a chart. What I think emerges from this discussion, in this chart, is a simple progression. If we start from Yehudah and Yosef are described as tribes for whom the conquest went well. God was with them. God was with Yehudah. Yehudah takes this entire region. He takes so much of his region that he has extra cities to hand off to Shimon. Yosef goes to Beit El, establishes Shiloh, establishes the Mishkan, and God is with him. Then we start the middle tribes, Binyamin, Menasheh, Ephraim, Zebulun, with a recognition of cities that they're unable to take, regions they're unable to take, and in all four of them, we find the expression Vayeshev so-and-so bekerev Yisrael, or bekirbam, that the Canaanites dwelt in their midst. There are Canaanite enclaves inside the territory of Israel. Except, then we get to Asher and Naphtali. Asher and Naphtali in the north, and the terminology is reversed. And suddenly it's Israelite enclaves amongst the Canaanites. Vayeshev ha'asheri bekerev ha'knani, or vayeshev bekerev ha'knani yoshvei ha'aretz. And Dan, vayilchatsu Dan ahara, Dan can't get anywhere near his territory. He has a couple of cities here on the coast, but in terms of really access, he's unable to get there. And so Dan will eventually migrate completely out of his region. So it's an interesting progression, but the parak takes us from the the magnitude of the conquest of Yehuda to the frustration of the conquests of Asher, Naphtali, and Dan in a progression of succession of weaker conquests as we go through the parak. I will leave you with one more thought. If you remember, when Moshe, at the end of Moshe's life, he tells Bnei Yisrael that when they come into the land of Israel, they're going to set the tribes, they're going to have to go through an entire ceremony in Har Gizim and Har Eva. Remember, we talked about it in Sefer Yeshua a lot. They're going to go to the city of Shechem, and they're going to set six tribes on the one mountain for the blessings, and six tribes on the other mountain for the curse. And there they're going to enact the ceremony of Brachot V'Klamot. I don't expect us to remember which tribes were where, but it is significant. So I've charted it out for you on the bottom of the page. Eli Yamdu Ala Bracha. The tribes that sat on Nahar Grizim for the Bracha were Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Yosef, and Binyamin. The tribes that sat, Elu Yamdu Ala Klala, Reuven, Gad, Asher, Zvulun, Dan, Naphtali. And one of the questions that Mefarshim struggle with is, what was the logic of the division? It doesn't divide by mothers, it doesn't divide by chronology. What determined which tribes would be on the side of the bracha, and which tribes would be on the side of the klala? Partially, I don't think that's the issue though. I think the issue, remember Shechem is here, the northern part of Shevet Menasheh. Or Shevet Yisachar, sort of right. So if I look at Shechem or Har Gerizim and Har Eval as a geographic division in the land, and I drew a line across, the tribes south, if I include Yisachar, are Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Ephraim and Asher, Yosef, and Binyamin. The tribes north are Dan, Asher, Naphtali, Zvulun, Reuven, and Gad. Northeast. So what the division is it takes all the tribes north and east and places them on the Har Eval, this mountain of the curse, and all the tribes from Yisachar south and places them on the mountains of the Bracha. As if to say that the tribes to the north are far more exposed to the Canaanites, far more in danger from the Canaanites, and therefore the warning essentially is to them. So you have two choices here. The south, which is closer to the central core of Israel, Shiloh, the Mishkan, represents in a sense the culture of Israel. The northeast, which is separate geographically, represents the Canaanites. So you can choose which way you want to go. Conceptually, culturally, theologically. That's what the bracha of Hagrizim, that's what the bracha of the ceremony of the brachas and klalos is all about. But the location of the tribes is significant because it divides them geographically as well. There's a whole debate whether the division of Hagrizim and Har Eval, whether the placement of those two mountains is east-west or north-south. So Yael Ben Nun once took us on a tour to the region. He believes very strongly that the location of the mountains is not as they're identified today, Har Gerizim and Har Eval, if you drive through, which are east-west. And in fact, two other mountains, which are near Shechem, which are located north-south. And there is a certain logic to that, compelling logic to that assertion. Okay. Adkan, Bezvat Hashem, next week we start Perek Bet. Did I skip you, Sachar? I may have skipped him.